Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, and welcome to the show. We are going to get right to a guest, which we typically don't do. I don't know if you've seen When They See Us. It's a Netflix original miniseries. And Kevin Richardson, Antron McCray, Raymond Santana, Corey Wise, and our guest today, Yousef Salam. Hello, Yousef. How are you?
I'm doing well. How's everything going? I'm definitely so glad to be on your radio right now.
I am so glad to speak to you. I didn't know much about the Central Park Five. I'll be honest with you. This was back in 1989. There was a female jogger that was assaulted and raped in Central Park. And you served how many years in jail for this?
Almost 7 years, actually. And then when you think about really doing the complete time, it was 10 years altogether. They gave us a 5 to 10 year prison sentence, those of us who were under the age of 16. And, of course, Corey Wise, he served the most time out of all of us, almost serving 14 years.
All right. And it turns out you guys didn't do it.
Yes. Yes. Deoxyribonucleic acid freed us.
Explain
that. What does that mean exactly? How were you freed by that?
I usually say that word because a lot of times when people hear DNA, DNA tends to be, DNA. It doesn't really sound that powerful, but DNA is deoxyribonucleic acid. And what happens is that when they had all of the information they had back in 1989, they tested all of the evidence that was on the jogger. They arrested Raymond Santana and Kevin Richardson that night. So you would imagine that if a rape had happened or if something had happened, you know, there will be some glaring evidence that would show that they had been there, that they had done something. It would have been an open and closed case. They only had false confessions. And the worst part about it is that by them keeping in line with this false narrative, here you had seasoned detectives that, you know, you couldn't even be assigned to this particular squad unless you had been on the job for approximately 20 years. So I say that because these were experts in their field. And as experts, they needed to be able to discern whether someone was lying or telling the truth. And I'm sure that they did that, and they knew that there were false narratives that were being gotten. The problem is that 13 years after this crime happened, the real perpetrator comes forward after seeing Corey Wise in prison and says, oh, my goodness, I got to tell the truth about this. I didn't know this guy was still in prison for the crime that I had committed. He had been going to church and trying to atone for all of these sins that he had done, some known, some unknown. Then he bumps into Corey for the second time and sees him and says, I got to tell the truth. He tells the truth. They check his DNA evidence, and lo and behold, it is a DNA match. The worst part about this crime, though, is that because they were so invested in this lie back in 1989, the real perpetrator was out there committing more crimes. The last victim he raped and murdered was a young pregnant Latina woman. You know, he killed her and her unborn child.
And here's the thing. First of all, watching this, how old were you when you were arrested? Were you 14 or 15?
I was 15 years old.
Okay, and it's heartbreaking that your good friend Corey went to accompany you for questioning, and he, since he was 16, he went to an adult prison, which, as a mom, I'm watching this and I'm crying because 16 years old with these hardcore men in prison, how could that have happened?
Right, and this is something that I want the public to continuously put in their mind and at their forefront. We were 14, 15, and 16-year-old children. It wasn't like we were hardened criminals. The way that the system vilified us made us into the pariahs that they wanted us to become. That moniker that they placed on us, that we were known for years, for decades, as the Central Park Five, was lifted just recently, when Oprah Winfrey rebranded us as the Exonerated Five. And it was such a good feeling to feel that, to be able to say, wow, you know, we have something that is clear, that is present, that identifies us as who we really are. And it was a powerful thing for us to be rebranded and have been given a new identity that is beyond a doubt the truth.
Isn't it amazing, Yousef, that it's just terminology, but it's such strong terminology that just the difference between being referred to as Central Park Five or Exonerated Five, it makes a world of difference. Isn't that strange?
It is absolutely strange. And I'm going to tell you, like, had we had had we been afforded the opportunity to be seen as innocent until proven guilty, we would not have received the fate that we had received, especially Corey Wise. Corey Wise didn't deserve any of that. You know, him being my ace in a hole, him being my good friend, him being someone who truly had my back, going into the precinct with me, saying, hey, I'll go there with you, not knowing the danger that lurks in that particular process. You know, here you have the Miranda warnings that states you have the right to remain silent. And if you fail to remain silent, part two kicks in. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have the right to an attorney. And then, of course, they always say, hey, you know, only guilty people need attorneys. But when you look at all of the things that happen to us, when you look at even the methodologies that they used in the interrogation process, the Reed technique, I understand that the Reed technique comes with a disclaimer that says, be careful who you use this technique against, because if you use it against someone who is innocent, it will cause them to confess to a crime that they didn't commit. And then you look at the film, and you get to understand very clearly what this technique is all about. Here you are handcuffed to a chair. Here you have an officer so close to you that as he's talking to you and yelling in your face, he can spit on you, and you can't even wipe the spit off of your face because you're handcuffed to a chair. You know, the invasion of personal space, the fear of sudden death, all of the lies that were told that caused people to doubt themselves. You're talking about almost upwards of 24 to 36 hours of interrogation without food, without anything to drink. And if you fell asleep, you were immediately woken up after you fell asleep. And so you began to live in this world of deliriousness, and you just wanted it to stop. You know, adults have confessed to crimes that they haven't committed under this technique, which is so atrocious.
Oh, my God. I would confess to anything to get out of there. And given the illusion that just cooperate with us and you're going home. I mean, there was so much of that. And how could they talk to you guys without a parent present? That's what I don't get. And has that changed?
It has changed a bit. And see, that's the problem. We, as victims of the criminal justice system, we want all of the lessons learned from the Central Park Jogger case to become part of the fabric and fiber of the criminal justice system moving forward. That being said, I think it behooves us, even if a person wants to come in and talk to the police officers, we need liaisons in the community that have no connection to police officers to be able to help these people, help someone in this process to understand what it is that they're doing. Process it correctly, because even in the event of you having a parent there, I mean, you see the Central Park Jogger case, there were many parents that were there. But did we know our rights? Yeah. My mother was the only one that seemed like she was kind of familiar to a sense or to a degree as to what she could do and how she could stand up for me in the face of adversity. And I think that that's something important. You know, as a part of the process, we want to make sure, like I said, that the most vulnerable of our citizens are afforded the opportunity to be seen as innocent until proven guilty. Even if they're seen as a suspect, even if they're caught red-handed, we still need to have them be afforded the opportunity to have proper representation, because as we all know, we live in two divided Americas.
Yep.
It's clear and present. You could be Dylann Roof, shoot up a church, and they'll take you out to get some dinner prior to you going to jail. Or you could be Ja'Keisha Clemons trying to get something to eat and asking for a fork and a knife at a Waffle House, and your top be ripped off, and you be choked, and you be told that they're going to break your arm, and now you're being prosecuted. I mean, these are some of the glaring examples. You know, of course, we have the Trayvon Martins of the world, the Tamir Rices of the world, the Eric Garners of the world. I mean, shoot, in New York State and really throughout the nation, you have on the side of cop cars these words in some variation. The words are to serve and protect, the most noble and honorable thing that you can think of. I guarantee that there are probably way more good cops than there are bad cops. But on the side of the cop cars in New York City, you have the words that accompany to serve and protect: courtesy, professionalism, and respect. Now imagine if you're Eric Garner and you're telling the officers, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. We watched as his life was taken from him. And they didn't give him the first letters off of the cop car. They didn't give him CPR. Now that right there tells us where we are, what they think of us, the problems that we need to overcome. And I think that as we look at the kaleidoscope of the human family who wants justice, who wants to be able to live in harmony, who wants to be able to live in peace, those people who happen to be children of former slave owners, children of former slaves, they look at the future and say, we need to make sure that we are given an opportunity to live in peace and harmony. And that can only happen with true justice, true equality, true freedom. And a lot of the legislation that has been backing some of the practices that we see has to change. We have to attack it from a point that is agreeable in this country, which is voting, which is legislation. And we have to understand that even if we don't want to vote, even if we think that our votes are going to be taken from us or stolen, we have to understand that non-participation is participation, because this is how the rest of the country operates.
Yusuf Salam is on with us, a member of the now called Exonerated Five. I'm telling you, you have to see When They See Us. It's a Netflix original series. Are you good on time? Can we take a quick break and continue and talk about your appearance at the Chicago Ideas Week?
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely.
It is Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. It's 720 and it's WGN. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and we are talking with one of the members of the Exonerated Five, Yusuf Salam, and you will be at Chicago Ideas Week tomorrow night, tomorrow from noon to 1:30, it's at the Harris Theater. You can go to chicagoideas.com to find out about tickets and the times for everything. When They See Us is on Netflix. I watched it. It was moving. It just really touched me, and I have to be honest with you, Yusuf, I didn't know all the details. I was familiar with the Central Park Five, but I did not know what transpired.
Yeah, and I think, you know, just to be honest with you, when we look at how cases of the Black or the African and American experience has been, especially when it comes to, you know, the criminal justice system, much of what happens goes under the radar, meaning we hear about it, sort of. It's socialized in society, sort of, but then the reality is that it's quickly swept under the rug, and so you forget. You're not told about, say, for instance, you know, the reality of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and what he represented. A lot of times you're kind of told about the idea of his speech, which became the I Have a Dream speech. But then when you really listen to that speech, you realize Dr. Martin Luther King was a very radical person. Even now, as we reread that speech, I heard a young girl we were at a function one night recently, and I heard her read the speech from memory. And it was so profound to hear a future mover and shaker share Dr. King's words. You know, I think that it's important for us to remember who we are and where we came from. It does a lot to keep us in the right perspective and frame of mind, especially as young people, because a lot of the young people today, they feel like they're living in a world of hopelessness. They have realized that in our communities, we've been told that we are going to be dead or in jail before we reach the age of 21. But no one I have ever heard or ever asked has ever raised their hand to say, you know what? Yeah, I planned that. I plan to be dead or in jail before I reach the age of 21. So if we didn't plan that, then what's really happening? What's happening is that we're playing out someone else's plan, someone else's desires, someone else's ideas on us. And I think that what happens, especially when I think about what happened to me with regards to the Central Park Jogger case, 6 months into my prison bid, I was asked the question that changed the trajectory of my life. It was a question that gave me total control over myself, that if even though I was still in bondage physically, my mind became free. I was able to meditate and think about things from a completely different perspective. And I think it changed everything, because then I began to realize that I had the ability to project my own self into my future. They were looking at my future self and they were trying to make sure that I killed myself, either spiritually, physically, or mentally. And for me, I had to make sure that that didn't happen, that even though we're living in a world that looks hopeless, I had to look at the positive. I had to look and say, I want to plant seeds in my future to make sure that the outcome is very, very favorable for me. And that's one of the things that I tell young people all the time. You know, you may be here, but I want you to think about success in such a way that you begin to have a vision board in your mind, that you meditate on it every day, that you look like you have a lucky life. When you realize that the tricks, the magic is that you're laboring under correct knowledge. And so lucky stands for, or lucky luck becomes an acronym, which stands for laboring under correct knowledge. And you begin to move in that reality. You begin to say to yourself, you know what? You only live once. That's true. But let me make this my best life. Let me plant seeds in the future of myself and my generations so that even if I become a Nipsey Hussle and I get taken out early, at least my children's children's children will be able to sit under the shade of the trees from those seeds that I planted.
You are such an inspiration. I can't even tell you. I know you got monetary compensation. I just don't know how you forgive and how you live with the guilt about Corey. I mean, you are just such an amazing man to move forward from this.
Well, you know, one of the things that I think about just in terms of Corey himself, he did that for me, and I always have his back. You know, I am his ace in the hole. If I can offer any help mentally, physically, spiritually, I'm always there for him. We're very good friends, actually. We still have remained friends to this day. We were the only two that knew each other going in. We were able to reunite and reconnect with each other coming out of that hellhole and that atrocity. They definitely separated us, and as you saw in the film, we couldn't even communicate, even though his mother wanted us to be able to share words, at least on paper. It was illegal for us to communicate, so we couldn't even maintain a relationship from afar. You know, the thing about being angry and bitter and being able to forgive, one of the things that I remember reading was the words of Nelson Mandela. And what he said was, after being in jail for 27 years, he said he had to leave bitterness and anger in the prison, because if he took it outside of the prison into the world, it would destroy him. And then I remember reading the words of Dr. Maya Angelou, and she said, you should be angry. And, you know, when you think about angry, anger is the thing that causes you to change your condition. You know, when they say, you know, God doesn't change the condition of a people until they change it for themselves. Once you take a step forward to changing your condition, then all of a sudden things begin to happen. It's like a domino effect. But what she said, Dr. Maya Angelou, was that she said, you should be angry. You must not be bitter. She said, bitterness is like a cancer. It eats upon the host. It doesn't do anything to the object of its displeasure. And then she gives us the action. She says, so use that anger. You dance it. You march it. You vote it. You vote it. You vote it. And of course, she didn't say it three times, but I'm echoing it three times because we're in that climate right now. We have to maintain our understanding of where we are and what we need to be about. But she said, you vote it. She said, you do everything about it. And then she said, you talk it. Never stop talking it. And when I read that, I said, wow. For years, they owned the narrative of who the Central Park Five were. When are we going to be able to stand up and tell the world who we are? And once we did, once we got the opportunity to do that through Ava DuVernay's masterful work, it's When Amazing. They See Us, you know, we got the opportunity not only to tell our story, but for the conversation to be a ripple around the globe, for everyone around the world to be talking about the Exonerated Five, for everyone around the world to be sending us love, to be sending us appreciation, to try to understand what the American criminal justice system is about. Why couldn't I, you know, maintain relations with Corey Wise on paper? You know, here was a friend of mine who went into prison for me.
I know. Yusuf, I couldn't return the favor. I'm telling you right now, I wish we had all day to talk to you, and we are out of time. You are such an inspiration to so many people. ChicagoIdeas.com. You can catch more of Yusuf Salam at Chicago Ideas tomorrow from noon to 1:30 at the Harris Theater. Please keep in touch with us. It was an honor to talk to you.
I will, and just to let people know, you can follow me on social media. I use my real name. You can also follow me on my website, YousefSpeaks.com.
God bless. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ides of March is waiting in the PPG Paints Green Room. They will be on with us after the news, and we are totally going to switch gears. We're all over the board today. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. It's 720 WGN. There we go.
Those were the original lyrics, Wendy.
All right, 55 years ago today, Jim Peterik is with us and the rest of a band that was formed. This was your first gig 55 years ago.
It is, Bob. Tell Wendy about that.
Well, we formed the band in summer of 64 and started practicing in Larry's basement and somehow got our first gig at the American Legion Hall in Berwyn, Illinois for, in those days, what was known as a sock hop. So played in the basement, and that was our first paying gig. And
how much did you make?
Well, we got $20.
Oh, wow.
A piece, $5 a man. There were four guys.
Oh, my God.
And it's these four guys.
There you are.
Yeah, but that's in 1964 dollars.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Take a guess for $5. I still have that $5 bill.
That was 55 years ago today that all happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there was no inclination back then, 55 years ago, that the longevity of you guys could last a half a century plus, right?
Yeah, you know, in high school, you're only thinking about what you're doing tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know? That's kind of, and good Lord, we've been asked all the time, you know, did you have any idea? And of course not.
You can't.
You
know? Right.
You can't predict this.
But driving home from that, you must have been on cloud nine, right? That must
have been two block drives.
Yeah. We were small too cloud. Young to drive. We had to walk.
So. Yeah, yeah. We actually went to Fralock's ice cream and celebrated. We probably blew that whole $20.
I remember Fralock's.
Yeah, right.
Wasn't there a Kentucky Fried Chicken in there too,
yeah,
or
well,
something?
Yeah, those were
the first
later.
In Chicago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Phenomenal ice cream and hot fudge, and we were just partying our, you know, hearts out.
How old were you?
I was 14.
Good God, y'all.
Yeah.
14, 15 years old. We couldn't drive yet. Our parents always had to drive us to the gigs. And they, God bless them, they were our biggest supporters. Load up the station wagon with amps and guitars.
They were your roadies.
They were our roadies.
They were roadies, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jim Peterik is here. Introduce the rest of the band, because then Scott May hooked up with you guys later.
Yeah, Scott May, our keyboard player for the last 30 years, and our guru. Bob Berglund on bass. Larry Millis, the leader of the band, on guitar and vocals. Mike Borch on the drums.
Hello. I mean, hello.
And we all are from Berwyn.
We are.
Yeah,
all of
Morton
you.
West, right?
Morton West.
Yeah.
No, Morton East.
Just him.
Oh,
me and John.
My mom went. Oh, no, she went to
perform. John Larson, our dear departed horn player, was a Morton East guy. We always said we had to keep these guys in line.
You know? Yeah, you got to.
They were tough.
Morton East was tougher, wasn't it?
It was. Cicero.
Yeah, my mom went there.
Yeah.
I heard you didn't see Madras shirts at
Madras shirts, right.
55 years ago, real quick question. Did you guys understand a direction that the band was heading in, or did you all have different opinions of what types of music you should play?
Well, we started out as a British Invasion wannabe band. Our first song, Like It or Lump It, which we will be doing for the first time ever since 1964.
Oh, nice.
At the Genesee Theater on the 26th. We were a kind of a Kinks, Zombies, Beatles type band. Then when we got the brass, we changed and we started doing like covers like I Feel Good. But that kind of morphed into the BS&T Chicago, Mike Bloomfield kind of sound.
Oh, really?
And that spawned the big one, Vehicle.
Yeah.
And Vehicle, a true story, pretty much.
It is. I wrote that to win my girlfriend back. She dumped me, and then she started asking me for rides, but nothing in return. Just shook my hand at the end of the ride.
Not even a peck on the cheek?
Not even a peck on the cheek.
Not even gas money.
Not even gas money. And I liked it because, you know, I got to smell her perfume. She wore Chantilly. Oh, love Chantilly.
Does she still?
I wish. She doesn't have that. She doesn't have the plaid skirt either from girls' high school, which I want to buy her one, and she will not let me buy one.
The Nice Ox.
But I finally said, you know, all I am to you is your limousine service. All I am is your vehicle, baby.
Yeah.
And,
ding!
That was a swing. The gates open. I heard this riff in my head. Ba-da-ba-ba-da. Yeah, that's the stuff. showed it to the Ides of March. We arranged it together as a band. Started playing it at all the dances, the Valley View Young Adults Club, the Green Gorilla, the Pink Fink. And the people would just love that song. We recorded it, went to number one, the fastest breaking song in Warner Brothers history. Guess who started calling me for dates?
That girl.
That girl, the plaid skirt girl.
Yeah.
And where is she now, I wonder?
47 years ago, she's listening to your show in her kitchen right now, Karen
hey,
Peter.
Karen.
You're holding her prisoner.
Yeah.
That's horrible, Jim. What are you doing?
I know. Well, everybody needs a hostage.
The Ides of March play on 55th anniversary, CD, vinyl, awesome. You have special guests on this?
Yes, we do. Mark Farner, go ahead, Bob.
My goodness. Kathy Richardson of Jefferson Starship, who's a Chicago gal and so talented.
She's amazing.
Oh, I know. Geez.
Mark Farner is no chop liver either.
You know,
oh my God.
Paul Schaefer plays keyboards in one of the songs.
Sweet.
Yep. Mindy Hebert. And of course, at the show we're doing on the 26th at the Genesee, we're bringing in three guests. Kathy Richardson, Bo Bice, who sang
American
Vehicle
Idol
to the top
right,
of the charts
right.
again.
Yeah.
And if you recall, he got to the finals at American Idol.
Yeah.
By singing Vehicle.
Right. Yeah. He's very good.
Is that why he's doing this with you?
Well, we
feel sorry for
friends
him.
At that.
I'm kidding.
Oh, my God. And no, he's doing great. He was with Blood, Sweat, and Tears for 6 years,
mm-hmm.
doing Vehicle in their set.
Sweet.
And saying that this is the best song that Blood, Sweat, and Tears never did. But everybody thought it was Blood, Sweat, and Tears, you know.
We got Joe Bonamassa, the great blues guitarist, is on the album, too. Joe Bonamassa. And the great, great, great Chicago singer Tom Doody from the Grind Shows.
Oh, yeah.
As well as David Pack from Ambrosia.
Right. Yeah, David Pack.
Has anybody mentioned Mark Farner yet?
Yeah. Yes.
Mark's he was right up at the...
Mark's going to be on the show with us the 26th.
That's Saturday the 26th, 55th anniversary show, Ides of March, Genesee Theater.
.com.
What .com? Just the Ides of March .com.
Well, no, GeneseeTheater.com
for
tickets. Tickets are $35 to $55.
That's a bargain.
It is. And there's a few websites that are selling them over that, so make sure it's the official Genesee site.
All right.
And you shouldn't pay more than $55 for the best ticket in the house.
Genesee.com.
GeneseeTheater.com.
Got it.
Yep. It's worth it. You just don't need to pay it, right?
That's right.
I'd pay $57, Jim. I really would.
$200.
That's right.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break. And you've heard Kathy Richardson's Berwyn song, right? Because that's amazing.
Yes.
I love that. We're going to take a break, and then will you grace us with your playing?
Heck yes.
Absolutely.
The Ides of March. They will be live in action. 55th anniversary show. GeneseeTheater.com. It's happening Saturday, October 26th. And they'll give us a little taste coming up next. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. Are you ready for some music?
I'm very ready, yeah.
The Ides of March, 55 years ago on this date, they played a VFW hall or American Legion in Berwyn.
VFW, I believe they said.
And that was 55 years ago today. They are celebrating their 55th anniversary at the Genesee Theater, Saturday, October 26th. You can get your tickets at GeneseeTheater.com, and you can listen to them live in action right now on WGN.
1, 2, 3, 4. Who's gonna be first to lay it on out? The silence is screaming 'cause nobody's talking out loud. Hear the shattering glass of the wind at the door. Even the dog's acting strange. He knows when that rain's gonna pour. Got on that horizon line. There's a darkness that's bleeding us dry. Love must have gone there to die. It's scaring me cold. It's like you and me and the sky, all three of us crying. Blue storm rising. I just know something bad is blowing on through. I'm gonna name this hurricane after you. The
that you love me the way I loved you back. Tell me, how did that blue sky we traded fade into black? Out on the horizon line, there's a darkness that's bleeding us dry. Love must have gone there to die, and it's scaring me cold. It's like you and me in the sky, all three of us crying. There's a blue storm. There's a blue storm rising.
That's awesome, you
That's
guys.
That's so good. So good.
Ides of March, you can find that on the Ides of March Play On CD or vinyl, or go to the Genesee Theater. Theater spelled the British way, R-E.
It's more impressive that way, Wendy.
GeneseeTheater.com for tickets. It's happening Saturday, October 26th. We have a couple of minutes. Where did the band name come from, the Ides of March? I don't think I've ever asked you that, Jim.
Well, I'm going to turn it over to Bob. Cause,
all right, Bob.
Well, you'll see why.
Yeah, they're going to blame me. So there was a song called Hanky Panky that was just skyrocketing up the charts after we had been the Shondells, our first name, for about 2 years. And we're getting gigs with that with our reputation. But all of a sudden, this song Hanky Panky's going up the charts by Tommy James and the Shondells. That said, we needed a new name immediately. For about a month, our manager decided it was really a good idea, because Batman was so big on TV back then, that we be Batman and the Boy Wonders. And we're still wondering why.
B-A-T-T, by
the way. Oh, yeah, even better.
And Larry was Batman, by the way. Yeah.
And we... Yeah, who was the Boy Wonder? We don't. We still wonder, but we rebelled even at 16 years old and said we hate it, absolutely hate it. And so now we're looking for a new name. And I'm sitting in English lit class, and we're reading Julius Caesar, and came upon the phrase "Beware the Ides of March," and I really didn't know what it meant, but it sounded really cool. And so it stuck, and it's really been a great name for us. That Bill Shakespeare really knows how to knows how to spin a yarn, you know.
And now Bill Leff can use Batman and the Boy
yeah,
Wonders
that's
for
open,
your band.
I'd like to take that name, please.
You can do that.
Thank you.
Yeah. We'll give you the cape too.
All right,
yeah, we've got a couple of costumes. If you
need it. We are so proud of you. You have made it 55 years. No fighting, no nothing.
We're pretty cohesive, you know. We love what we do. We've always been this way. And not to sound like a choir boy, but we never got into the temptations that ruined so many bands. I think that's our good Berwyn upbringing and great parents, and just we were always thankful for what we have.
Well, you got two fans here in the rest of the city too, and hopefully everybody goes to see them. They're celebrating 55 years, 55th anniversary show at Genesee Theater, Saturday, October 26th. The best place to get tickets, Genesee Theater, R-E, that's how you spell it, .com.
Yeah, you guys sound great.
Mark Farner will be there with us, Bo Bice, Kathy Richardson. Much fun, and it's going to be a great show. And if you want to come, you guys, I know a guy that knows a guy.
All right. Excellent.
Yeah,
excellent.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Good luck to you, and happy 55
All
years,
right.
guys.
Thank you. Thanks, Bill and Wendy. You guys are the best, okay?
Ah, thanks.
Thank
See,
you.
It's a march.
How cool is
they
that?
Sound
really,
good.
Batman and the Boy Wonders. I saw your eyes lit up.
I would have gone with that name, Wendy. That's just me. I would have gone with that name.
All right, it's Bill, it's Wendy, and news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on 720 WGN. All right, we are working really hard today. Are you noticing
yes,
that?
Yes, a lot of effort today, Wendy. It's going to screw up our average. Dr. John Duffy's here. Look, he's right there. It's Dr. John Duffy. Hi, John.
Hi, guys.
Nice to see you.
Good to see you.
You were just at an event last night at
Whitney Young High School. Yeah.
What was the event, can you say?
Yeah, I spoke about my book, Parenting the New Teen and the Age of Anxiety, available on Amazon right now. Yeah.
It's so good.
Thank you. Thank you, Wendy. And we had a really nice crowd, and people asked great questions. And Whitney Young is a really, really cool, really diverse, really interesting school.
Yeah.
Loved it there.
Yeah. Oh, good. I'm glad it went so well.
Yeah.
There's a term that I mentioned, and we're going to discuss this term in just a little bit. It's called sad fishing.
Yes.
Both Wendy and I are in agreement. We're not too up on the term.
Never heard of it.
You'll explain it to us in a little bit, but first, there's a question that I've been wanting to ask you for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So here you are. In the last couple of weeks, this movie, Joker, has become the number one movie in America. It's breaking all kinds of box office records. In it, there's a guy played by Joaquin Phoenix, who obviously has mental issues. There's no two ways around it.
No doubt, right.
It's his dealing with society and society dealing with him. First of all, did you see the movie yet?
I've not yet seen it. I've seen a number of scenes from it. I've talked to my son about it. I've talked to a bunch of kids about it. So I'm familiar with the themes.
I've heard doctors say that the film is unfair because it shows somebody who's obviously in mental climes, having a very difficult time surviving society.
Right.
And I've heard them say it's not fair because he's kind of an amalgam of various issues, and it gives people kind of a false read on people who have these problems. Can you even comment on that without seeing the movie?
Yeah, I feel pretty comfortable commenting on that because it reminds me of a lot of things that have happened in the news lately. School shooters, mass shooters, and people saying, hey, listen, we can't blame mental illness for this. This is a gun control issue, or this is an issue of another kind. Where I think my profession sometimes steers a little bit wrong is that people don't perpetuate this kind of stuff without suffering something emotionally.
Right.
It doesn't mean everybody who suffers something emotionally is going to do something to hurt anybody else.
Right.
The vast, vast majority of people do not. This is a little tiny fraction of 1%. When I think about Joker, it almost feels like a cautionary tale to me. Like, you know, we should treat people with kindness and we should be reaching out to people who are suffering. Otherwise, things are going to break down for us collectively.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, not directly in the way it does in the movie, but collectively. And I kind of do believe that. I do believe that we need to tend to our cultural wellness overall. And I think we're actually doing better at that now than we were 2 or 3 years ago.
Because why?
Because I think people are willing to talk about it more. I think there's less taboo. I think a lot of celebrities are willing to say, hey, listen, I suffer from depression. I suffer from anxiety.
Yeah.
You know, I've got bipolar disorder, and yet I do this thing. I do. I still am able to kind of lift myself up and do the acting thing or get on the court or the field and do my thing, but I get what that suffering is all about, and I feel for everybody else who suffers. And there are communities online for people who are suffering, which is really remarkable to have that support.
I just think years ago, probably 10 years ago, if you heard somebody, oh, I have a therapist appointment later, people would like feel uneasy hearing that information. And now it's bandied about very frequently, like, oh, yeah, I can't come tomorrow because I'm going to see my therapist. And I like that we're able to just go, yeah, it's part of our daily and weekly grooming. We take care of ourselves.
I work with a lot of young people, as you guys know, and oftentimes, and this happened yesterday twice, so a lot of kids, most everybody had the day off yesterday, and kids were dropped off by their friends at their therapist's office, at my office.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, oh, we'll come back in an hour and pick you up.
No stigma attached.
No, none whatsoever.
Good.
Yeah.
It is good.
Yeah.
There was a message that was glorified to some extent in the movie, in my opinion anyway, where his character, Arthur Fleck, talks to his psychologist explaining that he felt invisible in the world, that the world wasn't recognizing him, but now that he's committing violent acts, people are taking notice of him, and he's
right.
liking that. And I thought, even though I'm sure to some extent that's true, especially in the case of the movie, I was uncomfortable with them validating that point.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. You know, I think that might be playing off of what a lot of the mass shooters and the school shooters in the last few years have said about, you know, why, you know, those who have survived, which is really not that many.
Yeah.
But by and large, you know, to be really clear, people who suffer mental illness, depression, anxiety, OCD, even psychosis, they are so far more likely to be victims of some kind of crime, some kind of hatred,
right,
than they are to perpetuate it. You know, that they tend to be really kind of deep, thoughtful, kind people. And so I don't know if we can emphasize that enough. So that's probably something that the movie takes and kind of stratifies this little area,
yeah,
of, you know, that community, and it makes it seem like that's the whole thing. And I hope that's not the case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved it. And I mean, I said this, I don't know if I said it on the air. I think I did. I understand why he did the things he did. I'm not condoning it, and it's right, horrible, but there's it's less than random. It makes, yeah, sense of, you know, so be nice to people.
Really,
seriously,
that's probably, you know, kindness is probably, oddly, from what I understand about the movie, the point, right? Is,
yeah,
you know, like be kind to people. The repercussions can be awful for all of us.
Yes,
right, you know.
Yes,
yes. And the Joker might just be a manifestation of that. Yeah,
perfect.
So would you recommend, in a case like this, and I know this is tough, John, because you haven't seen the movie, so
yeah,
it's hard. I know you've only seen clips, but I always wonder if somebody is on the brink of that, a movie like this, there's no reason to believe it would push anybody over any edges, right?
No. In right? fact, I've worked with kids in the past couple of weeks who are in a pretty bad way, who are stressed, depressed, anxious, who have seen the movie.
Yeah.
And it's not, people aren't that suggestible. You know what I mean? Like, so they're interested in it. They want to talk about it, and they want to talk about, okay, so why did Arthur do what he did? And,
right,
you know, and what was the motivation? They're discerning. You know what I mean? That people don't lose all compass of reason because they're suffering a little bit.
Right.
Most of us are suffering a little bit. I actually find myself very drawn to the movie because it fosters discussion about,
yes,
all this stuff. We wouldn't be talking about mental wellness or mental,
right,
illness in the context of this movie if it weren't this kind of phenom, right? This big deal.
He also seemed like a recognizable character. Like when you just see him in scenes where he's sitting alone on a bus or walking through the town, you say to yourself, that's the kind of person I see on a daily basis. I don't know what's going on in their heads, but I'm used to seeing that guy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, to Wendy's point, the idea might be, don't just ignore that person.
Right.
You know what I mean? And for kids, it's kind of like, don't ignore that kid sitting alone in the lunchroom,
exactly,
or sitting alone in class. And,
mm-hmm,
you know, don't bully somebody randomly because you think they're going to be resilient to that somehow. You know, like, you know, be kind to people.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then we might be able to mitigate some of the terribleness that could happen,
yeah,
years from now.
Right. Come on. We all like to be liked. We really do. You know, Bill, if,
sure,
I see somebody who is not nice to me, I will try as hard as
win
I can
over
to win them over.
Right, right.
Because that's what we all desire. We all want to be liked.
Of course, it's a very core fundamental need,
yeah,
right? It's a,
yeah,
it's a very bottom of that hierarchy.
No question.
Yeah.
All right, Dr. John Duffy is here. We'll talk about sad fishing. Is it a new term to you? It is to us. He'll explain exactly what sad fishing is in just a little bit. Dr. John Duffy is here, clinical psychologist, certified life coach, the author of The Available Parent, and now the author of a new book, John?
Yes, Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety.
Available wherever books are sold.
Wherever books are sold.
All right, here's a term that I'd never heard until 2 days ago, sad fishing. Please,
yes,
explain.
Yes. Okay. So everything I think I know and I learn from the kids I work with.
Yeah.
And so I was giving a talk the other day, and a girl kind of raised her hand and said, yeah, kind of like sad fishing. And I asked her what that meant, and she said, effectively, this is posting about your difficulties, your anxiety, your depression, your breakup online, seeking out sympathy from other people. So a lot of kids do this, a lot of adults do it. Oftentimes it's exaggerated. And my concern about sad fishing, as I looked more into it in the last few days, is it puts kids in this very uncomfortable role of being de facto therapists for each other. And this always makes me nervous because, you know, they're, yeah, I went to grad school for 5 years.
Right.
I had to write a dissertation in order to do what I do.
You're licensed and bonded.
I'm licensed and bonded. I'm actually bonded.
Right.
And still, I feel over my skis once in a while.
Yeah.
You got 15-year-olds out there in the middle of the night trying to save each other's lives, mm-hmm, literally, and not sure whether they're dealing with somebody who's really in trouble or is kind of exaggerating the difficulty they're in. And so this is what sad fishing is all about. But it's a little worrisome worrisome to me as a therapist. I get why. I don't mind the idea that there's this community of support out
there,
but somewhere we need to find a lane for our kids that actually works for them so that they are able to talk to one another without using each other as therapists.
Yeah.
The best thing you ever said to me is my son had a friend who was having some trouble and was confiding in other friends. And I'm like, you know, they don't know how to go about doing it. And you said to me, it's a 16-year-old trying to help out a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
They don't know either.
Yeah. We can't expect them to, right?
Yes.
They're really, this generation, I think you guys know, I have so much respect for them. I think they're deep and keen and insightful and emotionally astute. But we can't ask them to do this. We can't ask them to take care of each other. So I usually think about what would I say to these kids? And I would probably say, don't respond in a threat. Respond, if you have something to say to this kid, text, you know, something through Snapchat that's one-on-one, or send them an actual direct text, or reach out to their parents if you really are concerned about their well-being, or encourage, at the very least, encourage professional help, and you can actually do that on the thread. But by and large, I would also encourage kids, if you're drawn to this kind of activity, to back out of that and actually go to an adult and ask for help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So initially when somebody posts something that contains some bad news, their hopes, I'm guessing, is to just sort of get some sympathy. Is that what they're hoping for?
Yeah. And I think 90% of the time, that's all they're hoping for. You know, like, I went through a breakup. This sucks. You know, can you help me out with that? So, you know, like, oh, we're all behind you. We support you.
Right.
But in the last few months, some kids have dug a little deeper and said, you know, like, I don't know if I'm going to make it through the night. You know, like really, really dark, depressive stuff where it feels urgent. It feels like it could be a crisis.
Sure,
you know?
It is, yeah.
And this stuff's not new. I remember back just post 9/11, I was working with a child who claimed that they had a parent who died in the World Trade Center and hadn't, in fact, and was kind of sad fishing in that way.
But to get attention
and sympathy, knowing full well this was going to break bad on her at some point, too.
Right.
Now, social media is such a potent way to do that. It's so much more powerful. And my fear is something could be direct. Something could happen quickly that we don't want in the hands of kids.
And even as an adult, like if somebody, a friend comes up to you and says, oh, I'm just so heartbroken, you know, my mom passed away. And then I say, oh, my mom passed away too. It's sometimes taking away some of their glory. Like they want to just say something like, okay, enough about you. I'm here to vent. And that puts a younger kid in that position where, what do you say? Do you say, oh, breakups are bad, I know? Or do you, how do you even respond when you don't know?
It's tough for kids sometimes because sometimes the only way they can think of to empathize is to sympathize and to be direct and say, oh, yeah, I feel that way too, so don't worry about it, you know, or something like that. But then you're putting yourself in this position too, right? And then all of a sudden you've got kind of this chain of people that is sharing their darkest stories.
Yeah.
And sometimes they try to one-up one another, right? Yeah. With how grim it is.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, I'll work with a child who will say, there's nothing wrong with me. I don't feel like I'm depressed or anxious or carry like OCD.
What's wrong with me? There's nothing wrong with me.
Exactly, Bill. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And that feels kind of strange for kids. Like, am I not thinking it through? Am I not deep enough to figure this out right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just to reiterate, if you're, let's say you're a teenager or even in your early 20s and you see a post from somebody that you know and it talks about desperation and saying, I don't know, as you said, I don't know that I'm going to make it through the night. What is your next best move if you read that?
So the next best move, in my opinion, is to reach out to them directly and ask them, you know, are you okay right now?
Yeah.
You know, and if you get a no to that, then all bets are off, just like they would be in my office.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk. Okay, I'm going to write your parents or, you know, I'm going to call 911 if it feels that urgent.
What do you do if I just said teenager or early 20s, but what if it is 30s or 40s or 50s? Is it the same rules to
absolutely.
Play by?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Sure.
But a kid, again, I'm just going, let's say 17 years old. A kid gets a text saying, you know, I don't know if I'm going to make it to tomorrow. Some of these kids don't know how to contact a parent to help. So what do you do?
Yeah, so in that situation, the only thing I can recommend kids do, and this might feel extreme, is to call 911. and you wouldn't regret doing it. Your friend might be mad. Oh, I was just venting. You know, I can't believe you did that to me. But better safe than sorry in situations like that. You cannot take that kind of a threat lightly, no matter how it's levied, whether it's directly or it's online. So if somebody says, I'm not going to make it till tomorrow, or, you know, I'm thinking about taking my own life, you can't take that lightly. You've got to act. And right, sometimes you don't know how to get in touch with a parent. So calling 911 and saying, this is their name, this is the threat, I can send you a screenshot of it, get over there right away.
You make so much sense out of parenting, because, boy, I just really didn't think it was going to be this hard. I really didn't.
You know, and it didn't used to be. I think it's getting tougher. I think it's getting tougher as we go.
He's
That's
Dr.
good
John
news.
Duffy.
Thanks, John.
Take it easy, guys.
How do people get in touch with you and find out about the new book as well, Parenting the Teen in the Age of Anxiety? Sorry.
Yeah. So you can find me at drjohnduffy.com, and I am at Barbara's Bookstore in Vernon Hills tonight at 6:30 as well.
Excellent. Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
I appreciate you being here. More after this. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, we have gone from different terms. One of them was sad fishing.
Yeah.
And now...
You got another one?
Yeah, sextortion.
Yeah.
Are you participating in that?
No, I'm not allowed to. I've been told to sit this one out, Wendy.
On the line with us right now, Jason Glassberg, ethical hacker and co-founder of Cassava Security. Jason, Bill is not involved in any sextortion scams.
Yep.
Can we be sure of that?
Not 100%.
Only kidding.
Of course.
Yeah, no, but, you know, it's funny to joke about, but it's actually a very serious matter. And it's one of, you know, most upcoming trends, as we see, in terms of security issues, especially combined with ransomware. And, you know, this whole talk about sextortion, and basically what you're talking is compromising someone or finding someone in a compromising position and taking advantage of it, whether they actually did the deed or not. And that can involve anything from getting just a random email that says, hey, I got your name and account information from one of these X-rated sites, to more nefarious email and threats saying, I actually installed malware on your computer, have videos of you visiting these sites, you know, please pay money, to craziness such as people getting ransomware, which locks down their computer and can only get their computer back by sending actual nude pictures of themselves. So, you know, as you can imagine, it would be a terrible thing to find yourself a victim of.
I just, there was something in the news today. The actor Jeremy Renner is claiming that
Hawkeye.
Oh, that is who that is?
Yeah, from the Marvel Universe.
He claims his sex-obsessed ex-wife is sharing nude photos of him. They're in a big custody dispute right now. And she is sharing pictures that he had sent to her.
Wow.
Here's the thing. Don't take pictures of yourself with no clothes on. Can I just say that?
Too late, Wendy.
Well, that's, you know, ultimately, that's really the advice. I mean, things on the internet never really disappear. And so if you don't feel comfortable sharing it with your mother, you probably shouldn't share it with folks over the internet.
But
that's true. I just got to say, ew, right
there. But Jason, what Wendy just brought up, that's one of the biggest, if you're looking at the numbers of where sextortion is taking place, it's kind of a version of that. It's people who are kind of getting back at ex-wives or ex-husbands or ex-girlfriends or boyfriends. They've got pictures and they're saying, if I don't get a certain amount of money or more or something else, these are going to become available to everybody. That's the biggest lift in numbers, right?
It really is, you know, and there's another, you know, kind of sadder, darker angle of this, too, is that, you know, with the rise of social media, there's a lot of folks who maybe don't get out as much and maintain a lot of online, you know, various social media platforms. And so people find themselves being victimized by someone striking up a conversation, getting more and more familiar. The conversations go to the point where they go to exchange photographs, and that leads to certain kinds of photographs being shared. And then the next thing you know, it's turned around and saying, hey, now I've got these pictures of you. Pay me this money or I'm going to release them.
All right. Well, October is National Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and that's why we're talking to Jason Glassberg today, co-founder of Cassava Security. What are some other threats that are going on besides this sextortion? It's just kind of fun to say. I'm sorry.
I hear you. One of the areas we're seeing quite a bit more activity is attacks having to do with mobile devices as well as the applications that run on them. You may have recently seen in the news the founder of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, was victimized by someone sending out tweets in his name, you know, kind of these racist, you know, ridiculous tweets, and people wondered how that was being done. He claimed he was hacked, and it turns out the way the hack took place was rather interesting. He was the victim of what they're calling SMS switching or SIM switching, where someone actually goes to the cell phone company, says, "Hey, I've lost my phone," and gets the SIM card, which you put in your phone, which authorizes your phone, gets your number and allows them to control that number. In the case of the Twitter hack, they had a process where you could send a tweet from your phone if you had the right phone number, and that's what these guys did. They were able to get his phone number by getting his SIM switched to their phone, and, you know, was able to tweet accordingly. But folks also use their phones in a lot of, you know, multi-factor authentication activities. You know, you go to log in, you get this text where you put in a code, and then you can, for instance, get on your banking app. And so you can imagine if someone's able to get your cell phone number and do those kinds of things, all sorts of badness can happen.
I am worried about getting hacked because I think that I'm really conscientious about things. I was looking through my junk mail folders, and some of the stuff I'm getting, like from FedEx, from banks, like your account is in jeopardy, from a bank I don't even bank at.
Yeah.
I could see how easily somebody could fall for these things. So, I mean, what's
absolutely.
It scares me. A family member of mine, just her debit card was hacked, and she was telling me she went into the bank to use the ATM there. So there probably wasn't a skimmer if it was in the bank lobby. And I said, you can get your card compromised from any online purchase. I mean, are we safe at all anymore, Jason?
Well, you know, there's a lot of money involved in all of these online transactions. And wherever there's a lot of money, there's going to be a certain element that wants to get that money illegitimately, basically crooks. And there are a lot of things folks can do to ensure that they're safer. Because after all, most of the time, these are not targeted crimes. They're kinds of crimes of opportunity. So if you can raise the bar and increase your own security to make it more difficult for the crooks, they're going to move on to someone else. And one of the things that you can do, as you mentioned, is not use ATMs in shady locations. I mean, the skimming problem is a real deal. People put these small readers within the ATM machines themselves, and they can, you know, pull out your card numbers. But that's less apt to happen in, say, a place like a bank or a store that has, you know, is well lit. The other things folks can do is just not click on links from random emails.
Yeah.
And if you do get an email from a bank or some financial institution, just pick up the phone and call the bank instead of just randomly clicking. I mean, there's not a serious financial institution in the world that would ever ask you for your password or credentials through just an email. And if you're getting an email like that, call the bank, you know, call whatever institution and say, hey, is this legitimate?
That reminds me of something.
The same thing.
Oh, go on, Jason. Sorry.
I was going to say the same thing is true of anything. Right. The IRS is never just going to send you an email.
Right.
The IRS will not even call you. The IRS will only contact you through, you know, regular U.S. Postal Service mail. And so anything else you can just assume is a scam.
Jason, what you just said reminds me, a week doesn't go by that on Facebook somebody doesn't send me a note that says essentially, hey, I just saw this video. Is that you in the video? And then they want you to click on a link, and then you get some sort of malware on your computer. This has been going on for a while, right?
Exactly. I mean, that's really the crux of the matter, is people just need to be aware and unfortunately assume the worst and just verify. You know,
yeah.
You can trust, as they say, you can trust and verify. And so if someone's sending you a lot of links and you know this person, contact them out of band or outside of that social network. And did you send me this? I mean, it may take an extra 10, 15 minutes, half an hour, But in the end, it's worth it.
All right. We only have a minute here. He is ethical hacker and co-founder of Kasaba Security. You can go to kasaba.com. He's Jason Glassberg. Something that I've been doing lately, there are these portals for your medical tests. And I didn't really worry that much about it. But if people get your medical records, that could be worse than anything else.
Well, absolutely. And in fact, if you look at the cost of your data, right, you know, people can steal your credit card. They can take your social security number. Those are worth mere pennies or dollars on the black market. Your medical records are worth in the thousands. Jeez. Because with medical records, you have an almost entirely complete picture of you as a person.
I think someone just hacked
Jason. Wow.
Yes, we've lost him. But you can go to that is bad timing, man. We were just wrapping up.
I know.
But there are all these portals now where you can check to see the results of your tests,
right,
or what
sure.
have you. So you can find out more by checking out kasaba.com, C-A-S-A-B-A.com. He's Jason Glassberg, and he's pretty thorough with
yeah.
his stuff.
Yep.
News coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We're doing it all for you. And also coming up, we're going to be on the stream on WGN Extra, and you can hear us talk about what's hot and what's cold. That's sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Man. Bark, 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 bark. We are going to be out at Tree Time tomorrow, and I can't wait. I love going out there.
It's going to be fun. Come on out and join us.
We'll be there from 10 a.m., and we're doing the bonus hour there as well, 1 p.m. We have things to give away, including something like this. We have a four-pack, a family four-pack of movie passes to classic cinemas to share with you, the listener, right now. You can share the joy of movies with family and friends this holiday season. Find them at classiccinemas.com. And if you want more holiday fun, like I said, stop by our Goodwill Tree Time broadcast tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Tree Time in Lake Barrington. Bring your artificial Christmas tree if you have one. You'll get a $75 discount off select new trees at Tree Time. Let's do caller number 7. Lucky 7, 312-981-7200. Caller number 7. You'll walk away with this family four-pack of passes to classic cinemas.
Wendy, I have a great moment from one of America's favorite game shows that took place on Monday. I don't know if you got to hear this or see this. You know how on any game show, there's that time where the host of the show will do a brief interview with the guests just so that the audience gets to know a little bit about him or her. You get kind of a brief outline of what that person does for a living, if they're married, if they have any interesting hobbies, if they have a story. Alex Trebek is a master at this.
Oh, he's good. Although it's so awkward. Not from Alex's side, but...
It's awkward because you have a very limited amount of time, usually about 20 seconds... to get your information across. And
do you want to try it with the winner from Classic Cinemas?
Yeah, do that with the winner?
Yeah,
sure.
You can play the part of a game show host.
All right.
And this is, this is Judy from Wonder Lake.
Judy, it says here you're a housewife and mother of 14 from Wonder Lake, Illinois. Is that correct?
I'm not a mother of 14, no.
Oh, I got some bad information there.
But you are going to go to Classic Cinemas, so you scored a family four-pack. I hope you enjoy it.
Thank you so much.
All right, hang on. We'll
Thanks,
get your information.
Judy.
That didn't go that good.
No, it went horribly.
ClassicCinemas.com.
Someone told me she had 14 kids, and I think she had more. I don't know how many kids she had, but she didn't want to talk about it, Wendy. All right, so here's a moment from Monday's episode of Wheel of Fortune, where Pat Sajak, the host of Wheel of Fortune...
Forever.
Since biblical times.
Yeah.
He's been there forever. He's talking to a guy named Blair Davis, and he's just kind of making that kind of polite small talk that a host is supposed to do. And then this happens. Listen.
Hello, Blair.
Hello.
Blair Davis, Cardiff, California. Owned the trucking business, it says here.
Small trucking business in San Diego.
Good for you. And talk about your family.
I've been trapped in a loveless marriage for the last 12 years to an old battle axe named Kim. She cursed my life with three stepchildren named Star, RJ, and Ryan, and I have one rotten grandson.
Yay! No wonder you came here. You just wanted to get away from everybody. I know you're being facetious.
Absolutely. I love them like nobody's business.
I'll bet you do. What's the story of the beard and your grandson?
I started growing the beard a couple of years back, and every time I threaten to shave it off, he gives me a really hard time.
Yeah, so it's going to stay, apparently.
He's grown used to it.
Okay, good to have you. Don't get it tangled up in the wheel. That's all we ask. All right,
that's enough.
Pat should have stopped after that.
See, I think somebody tipped Pat Sajak off to the fact that he was going to mess with him a little bit and say he was trapped in a loveless marriage and has horrible kids, stepkids, and stuff like that, because it would have played better if Pat didn't know.
Yes, that would have been awesome. And it was so funny on its own.
Why the disclaimer?
But why to go on to the beard question,
right,
then?
You should have left it there. I don't know.
It was prearranged. He cleared this with his family.
Because normally, like, Pat would have looked shocked. And when you, I know you can't see it because it's radio, but when you see it, Pat's just kind of smiling and nodding his head, like, "Oh, that's funny that the guy's making fun of his family, because he obviously loves him. He wouldn't be doing this." But I wish that part of it wasn't in there. I know he was kidding. I get that, but wouldn't you have pulled for this guy more if he had said that and just left it alone?
That, yes. A battle axe. I haven't heard that in so long.
Very rarely do you hear, especially on a game show, a contestant refer to a loved one as a battle axe.
That's my goal.
Right.
For Jimmy to call me
to someday
battle axe.
Be a battle axe. So, yeah, I enjoyed the moment. I thought it was played very nicely. I just wish there was no disclaimer, and I wish so badly that the producers of Wheel of Fortune wouldn't have tipped Pat to the fact that this guy was going to say this.
His reaction would have been priceless.
Very funny. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break, and then Wendy and I are headed toward the stream. We'd love for you to join us there, but there's another option. You got the Wintrust Business Lunch next on WGN.